And coming up in a moment, we've got Field Yates from ESPN. He'll be with us in seconds for our weekly visit. His appearance is brought to you by Naples Wealth Planning. Check out their website at betterplantoday.com and schedule yourself a free consultation. A lot of things we want to talk to him about with his opinion on last night. The Chargers going for two, going for the win. Very ballsy move. And I liked it. It was a fun game to watch, even though it was a 14-point game in the fourth quarter. It was a fun game. Something told you, you just better hang around.
Totally agree. I couldn't shut it off.
It was
fantastic.
All right, so Field is with us right now. Field, how are you?
Hey, Field.
Hey, guys. What's going on? Good to talk to you.
Yeah, we were just discussing last night's game, even though it was a 14-point game in the fourth quarter. Something told you, you just better hang around and watch that thing. And then the ballsy call to go for two and the win instead of the tie. It was just awesome. It worked. I mean, I guess I'd be singing a different tune today if it didn't work, because I certainly would have kicked it and tied the game instead of going for the win. But, man, what a great game that was. And the Chargers, just what a great season they're having.
Yeah, and you know something, Craig? It goes back before just the two-point conversion. I don't want to say that the Chargers played a perfect game last night, because the reality is it's not a perfect game when you turn the football over twice in the first half and Philip Rivers took full responsibility for that. I just got to say, by the way, before I continue my answer, I love Philip Rivers. And mm-hmm. I don't care what team you root for. If you don't love Philip Rivers and appreciate him, mm-hmm. that's a problem. That guy is tremendous, and love to see him shine on the national stage. But going on with the answer about how it wasn't perfect from the Chargers, but it wasn't just a two-point conversion. In the second half, they were playing at such a deliberate pace. Basically, they were giving themselves very little margin for error. It was, we're not going to speed things up to try to score quick. We're going to do what we think is most effective, long drive in the second half, and we're going to find a way to get a stop of the Chiefs. And they did that. Obviously, they stopped the Chiefs deep in their own territory late in the game to force a punt. And even after taking a first down holding penalty, the Chargers managed to go 70 yards in about 2 minutes and 35 seconds in what was one of the best drives of the NFL this season.
And it's amazing what could happen next week if the Chiefs lose in Seattle and the Chargers take care of business at home against a tough Baltimore team, depending on what happens. But you could be, I mean, who would have thought 4 weeks ago the Chiefs may actually have to go on the road if they want to get to the Super Bowl and win three on the road? Who would have thought that 3 or 4 weeks ago?
Yeah, and I still feel like it's a little bit premature to start discussing that, Pete, only mm-hmm. because there is, the Chiefs have the edge. I mean, right now, if you were to play out the rest of the season, the Chiefs have the best shot at the number one seed in the AFC going forward, and I have a hard time envisioning them losing back-to-back games. But it's the margin for error is significantly slim for the Kansas City Chiefs now. I still have a lot of faith in that offense. I think the question for the Chiefs is just what kind of defensive reparations mm-hmm. can they make over the next 2 weeks, which basically amounts to practice time, because there aren't a lot of players that are around, you know, on the open market right now that you say, all right, bam, sign that guy, and all of a sudden we become a much better player, or a much better team, I should say. For Kansas City, it also sounds like they're going to be without Kendall Fuller, their best defensive secondary player right now, because of a wrist injury. So a thin secondary gets thinner for Kansas City. And that's going to be, I think, what defines the Chiefs' season, is how they can play defensively in the playoffs.
One thing I like about the Chargers and find them so exciting to watch, you know, sometimes we hear the old cliche with the broadcasters, well, such and such team isn't built to come from behind. We've seen this team come from behind at 17 on the road at Pittsburgh and come from two touchdowns at Kansas City, two very difficult places to play by sizable margins, and come out with a win. I think that's going to bode well for them in the postseason. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it could. I just say this is like the formula, though, to win is never to play from behind, right?
Yeah, right.
You can't do that. Like, just because you are capable of it doesn't mean that you're comfortable with it. You know, it's like, I think that, the Chargers, what allows them to be able to play from behind is this, is that these two games where they have struggled out of the gate has been lack of efficiency, not like a talent issue. It's been that the defense and the offense haven't been in full swing or, you know, at fully functioning levels up until halftime or the third quarter of a game. But they're so talented on defense and so good on offense as well that they are capable of being great in any given Sunday. But I can tell you this much, whether the Chargers We know they're capable of doing it, but you can bet your bottom dollar that there's no part of them that wants to be playing for multiple scores down, home, on the road, playoffs, or no playoffs.
Phil, the Miami Dolphins, I think, have there's a lot. We always talk about intriguing games. I think there's three or four of them. This is one of them to me. I think they're catching the Vikings at a great time. I think they're playing better football than the Vikings right now, it's going to be real fascinating to me if they can have some sort of semblance of a run defense, because you know they're right up there in takeaways. I think they have a legitimate shot to go into Minnesota. That team is falling apart at the seams and pull off an upset and stay in the hunt.
Yeah, it's so funny. I mean, you know, you watch the Dolphins each week and it doesn't make sense sometimes that they can be so good, guys. And yet here they are at 7-6. So, like, why doubt them? Meanwhile, you watch the Vikings and it's like they have all the talent. They have all the pieces that you really would, you know, if you were to draw, you know, if you were to do a draft of all the rosters in the NFL, you know, I think you probably would take, you know, the Saints or the Chiefs or the Rams first. The Patriots would be up there. Steelers, Chargers would be up there. But the Vikings would be right there in the mix, too. Obviously, the Bears. The Vikings would be way up there. So this is sort of two teams. One that's outplaying expectations. One that's underplaying expectations. Something's got to give on Sunday.
And when you look at the Vikings, might they have some rust this weekend? Because, look, they were not happy with themselves, not running the ball. They made a change at offensive coordinator. Kirk Cousins says he's going to be more involved in the game planning now. They may come out swinging and miss or be rusty or something. I'm not sure what. So I think, again, that lends to the opportunity that Miami has before them.
Yeah, we always talk about these coordinator changes because, you know, it's a stark change, right? I mean, this is a big deal when someone gets fired from a very prominent position. But what I would say, guys, is, like, what's the empirical evidence that we have this year that a coordinator change means absolute change? Right, I mean, we've seen teams like the Bengals move on, the Buccaneers move on from their defensive coordinator. They stay bad defensively. You know, they haven't gotten any better. Carroll Austin didn't deserve to get fired as much as any of the players deserve to get fired in Cincinnati, right? Obviously, you know, it's a different circumstance, right? Coaches versus players. But Mike Smith got fired by the Buccaneers, and you know what happened to their defense? It stayed crappy. That's football sometimes. Yeah. So we'll see what happens with. Now, there have been some examples. You know, the Browns are the one that really stands out where you make a coaching shift and all of a sudden things change rapidly. But I'm not disagreeing with the statement or the decision. It's, you know, I always, you know, there's a reason why you're doing this if you're Mike Zimmer. But I also don't think that, you know, hey, this happens and all of a sudden things change dramatically. I think it could be that, you know, things might not change that much.
Well, it's only a couple games at 4 o'clock and 4:25, Seattle and San Fran, which I think it might be a more dangerous game than people want to make it out to be, because there's something funky about that line being only 3.5. But the Patriots and Steelers, obviously, same exact time, same network, same week, same stadium, blah, blah, blah. Both teams coming off subpar performances, obviously. But the Patriots' record after losses, we don't have to go into that. We know what it is. We know what the record is in Pittsburgh against the Steelers. Which team is more desperate? And if the Patriots should win this one and Kansas City, you know, has another brain cramp next week in Seattle, boy, oh, boy, a lot of people around here are going to be upset when they're the number one seed again in 3 weeks. I could absolutely see that scenario happening.
Yeah, I think the team that's more desperate here is Pittsburgh, only because if you look at what could happen with the Patriots, and another team wants to lose, but, you know, just from the standpoint that if the Patriots lose, worst-case scenario, they're still in first place in their division on Sunday night. Whereas if the Steelers lose, worst-case scenario is that they're staring up at the Baltimore Ravens in the standing. If the Ravens beat the Bucs and the Steelers fall to 7-6-1 with two games left after that, and, no, by the way, the Browns could be 6-7-1, as unlikely as that may seem in some ways. So the more desperate team, just from a standings standpoint, is the Pittsburgh Steelers. But, you know, the Patriots got dished some humble pie last week, guys. And one of the most memorable finishes to an NFL game that we'll probably ever see. So both of these teams should be as hungry as ever for a win. And not that you're not that way every single week, but that's certainly something to keep in mind. You know, both of these teams should be coming out firing on Sunday. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot of points scored in this one.
They should be, but Tomlin always seems to not adjust his game plan at all. Gronk has major games against this team, coming off his best game of the year, obviously, last week. And, you know, Brady 11-2 against the Steelers. I just, Tomlin seems so stubborn when they match up, and I'm just wondering if he's going to learn through the errors of his ways and adjust during the game or just stick with that zone coverage.
Yeah, you know, I'm a little bit less sort of down on what the Steelers have done against the Patriots. Obviously, the number, you know, I know the Patriots have won several straight games, but you remember that game last week or that last season? You know, that's one of those that like is a nail biter, right? I mean, mm-hmm. If it wouldn't surprise anybody if it went the other way. I look at this guys as like two really good teams and two highly competitive quarterbacks. You know, two teams that have dominant weapons. On their offensive side of the ball, and I think it comes down to a couple of things here. First of all, better kicking production. Do you guys remember last week? The Patriots left 4 points on the board with their kicker, Steven Goskowski. The Steelers did the same with their kicker, Chris Boswell. And then defensively, who can get a few more stops? And I don't know that it's necessarily just disrupting the quarterbacks up front. That always helps. But who can play better pass defense? Who can cover for a little bit longer on Sunday? That, to me, will be a big part of deciding this game.
Field, just about 30 seconds or so left here. I want you to comment on Carson Wentz, the cracked vertebrae. Looks like it's going to be 3 months of rest in order to fix that. But I did see a crawl for a couple of hours on ESPN that the Eagles were not ruling him out against the Rams. I figure that was just somebody in the Eagles trying to keep the Rams guessing until the last second. And that's, I haven't seen that. The crawl's been taken down. There's no way he's playing again, right?
I don't know about that. I mean, listen, I don't think he's going to play on Sunday night, but I don't think that he's out for the season by any stretch. And maybe we'll find out. Maybe they'll change their minds. But I think the Eagles, who have a thread of hope for the playoffs, are preserving for the possibility that Carson Wentz could return, if not this week, then maybe next week or week 17.
All right. Very good. Have yourself a great weekend. Thanks again.
Thanks, Field.
Thanks, guys. Take care now.
All right.
I think that is Field Yates from ESPN, our NFL insider, brought to you by Naples Wealth Planning. Check out betterplantoday.com and schedule yourself a free consultation.